Welcome back to the USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast. This is the October 11th, 2022 edition. The USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast is the original podcast covering the USC Trojans men's college basketball team and is available on such platforms as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn, as well as at the USCHoops.com website. If you haven't done so already, we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a five-star rating and left a review on the platform of your choice. This is your co-host, Chase, as always, joined by Nick. Nick, how you doing, man?
Chase, I'm fantastic, man, but not quite as good as Andy Enfield's been the last couple days here.
Yes. Well, look, the timing stemmed from the big event, which was our last podcast, which did the official USCHoops.com projection for the USC 2023 recruiting class, and we're already 2 for 3
on our projection. There you go. Hell of a start for the first week coming out of the predictions podcast.
Yes. So just as to recap, we had the first guy we talked about on our podcast was Silas Demery from North Carolina. And sure enough, he committed earlier last week. And a little bit of a surprise on the timing, our second guy that we picked was Arrington Page from Georgia, and he committed So Demery committed on Friday, which we knew about.
Yep.
And then and then Page committed yesterday. Is that right?
Yep. And we're recording this on a Tuesday night. So he committed on Monday.
Yep. Yes. So we're 2/3 of the way there. We talked about these guys already, but man, it's great to actually have players committed in the recruiting class for 2023, where we were at zero previously. We obviously anticipate Isaiah Collier rounding out the class. I think based upon developments and just looking at the roster, my guess is at this stage, at least in the fall for sure, I don't think we'll be looking to get any more 2023 high school players, certainly in the fall signing period. Don't you agree with that?
I think that's right. And even with these three guys coming in, and we'll talk about kind of the greater context of the roster as well on the pod, but it's shaping up to be a pretty young team next year.
Yes. So let's assume, just for the sake of argument for now, that let's say that the kind of the guys currently on the team remain, the more upperclassmen leave. Well, so if there's three players in the 2023 class that are going to be freshmen, the next class obviously currently, now we don't know if this will stay this way, but it currently has five players. That's the 2022 class, which is about to start. And then when it comes to current sophomores, guys who will be juniors next season, guys left on the team include not only Kobe Johnson and Malik Thomas and Harrison Hornery, but also Reese Waters. So, because he obviously was originally in that class, and the amount of time he did spend in games when he left high school early didn't count against him because of the COVID season. So, we're very over kind of like heavy on youth, particularly because we have currently had this five-man recruiting class coming in for 2022 with all freshmen. So, I don't know what the possibilities are going to be to bring in transfers going forward. But yeah, I don't think, following a five-person high school class with four more is probably the best idea. I mean, you start to get a very young roster.
Yeah, and this is really derived from the 2019 and 2020 recruiting classes. So the team has nobody from either of those classes still on the roster. So 2020 was a very light class. It just had Evan Mobley and Boubacar Koulibaly. And I'm talking about strictly from the high school ranks, whereas 2019 was a big class. It had Isaiah Mobley. He was 3 and out. Big O, he was 1 and done. Max transferred. Kyle Sturdivant transferred. Drake London, went pro in football, obviously. And then Ethan Anderson transferred. So that's kind of those two classes are leading to the roster imbalance that you're seeing right now. But you combine that with the fact that we weren't very aggressive in the transfer portal this offseason. So we've got the two you know, senior transfers, Boogie and Drew, but they were the prior year, right? So I do think that the staff has done a good job, though, of getting those multi-year players starting in the 2021 class. So I'm talking about Reese Dixon Waters, Kobe Johnson, Harrison Hornery. I think those guys are pretty good bets to be on the roster as juniors next year. And again, we don't want to speculate or anything, but you know, Malik Thomas, Noziah Sellers, I think what you'll probably see shake out is one of those guys will get more of the minutes in the rotation and kind of claim that rotation spot.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just based upon numbers, it's who knows? I mean, things could change and maybe they're both just, you know, dynamite this season, but you know, it's starting to look that way. So, you know, it will be an interesting team the way it shakes out for next year. I mean, we're obviously should be very, very strong next year. Of course, you know, things can change, players can leave. There could be real problems with the program. You never know. So you don't want to count your chickens before you hatch, before they hatch. But this is, you know, next year is really, to the extent this can be viewed as kind of a rebuilding year, next year would be a kind of the payoff year because that's the big year with Collier. And I think, you know, I think potentially we could have a decent team this year and see who breaks out and then use that as the catalyst for next season.
Yeah, totally agree. And I do think it is notable that the last few classes, I think you're starting to really see these multi-year players that are quality players just stack on one another. And I think that's really key for the long-term health of the program.
Yeah. Okay. So, we're getting very close to the start of the season. I think we're less than 4 weeks out now. For those of you who don't, you always follow John Rothstein's Twitter account because he is constantly updating everyone every day how soon college basketball season will be starting. Our first game is going to be at home against Florida Gulf Coast on the opening night, I believe. But we should start talking about how, you know, some of the, on a big picture basis, what the season might look like. I think we should start discussing maybe, you know, we've talked about the Pac-12 before, and this is one of our last two seasons in the Pac-12. But you know, it looks to me to be another kind of unbalanced conference. There's some real teams that are going to struggle, I think, at the bottom end, and there are going to be some teams that are pretty tough at the top end. So, you know, big picture basis, you know, I think there might be a competition between Cal and Oregon State as to who's looking the weakest right now in the conference. But I don't think either of those programs is looking so hot.
Yeah, and I think Washington State's going to have their struggles without Abagidi. He went to the G League Ignite, so I don't think they're on the level of Oregon State or Cal per se, but you definitely have a lot of winnable games towards the bottom of the league. And these are, you know, a lot of the same schools that weren't really proactive in the NIL market. So I think you're starting to see like a correlation there, kind of the top tier schools are really getting serious about basketball and NIL. Arizona's always been committed, and I think Oregon's really showing their commitment in NIL as well. But and we can talk about UCLA. That's a whole nother kind of can of worms. I know their fan base is really upset about their NIL, and they're having some issues getting their international players admitted. I totally switched gears on you here, Chase.
So I guess if we're going to talk about UCLA, next year is going to be the real big question mark for them and see exactly what they can do about kind of filling the gaps in what is going to be the roster for next season. Because for right now, as it currently stands, they kind of, you know, they have a roster that looks on paper balanced enough, potentially dangerous enough. So just walking through that very briefly, they obviously have Tiger Campbell, who's really had a tremendous year last year. They have Jaime Hawkes, who probably will be the best player in the Pac-12. I'd say the best player in the Western part of the country, except for Drew Timmy's back at at Gonzaga. So, I mean,
yep.
Jaime Hawkins is a tremendous player. It's going to be really, really good for them. They had kind of a last second. I think everyone expected Johnny Juzang to leave because he flirted the season before and kind of, I think, has done everything he possibly can do at the college level. The surprise was Jules Bernard, who had another season of eligibility because of COVID, if he wanted to take it, and he didn't. And him leaving left kind of a starter spot open for Jalen Clark, which I think in some ways is helpful because I think there would have been an issue for Jalen Clark if he had to come off the bench again. But, you know, Jules Bernard was really down the stretch when UCLA really kind of got their act together. It wasn't just Jaquez. It was also Jules Bernard finally getting a shooting together on what was a really an up and down season. You know, Amari Bailey's going to come in. He's going to start at the two. I think that's clear. And Adembona is going to come in and play the five. So they have a nice little group of five starters there. They could certainly make an argument for having as good of a starting five as any team in the country. You know, they have David Singleton still coming off the bench. They'll have Mac Etienne, assuming he doesn't have any more legal troubles, coming off the bench at the five. So I think they've got a good team, but the problem they're going to face, you know, more long-term here, and this is where NIL comes into play, is after the season, Jaquez is going to be gone. Amari Bailey is going to go to the NBA. We've heard Tyre Campbell's going to be leaving. Adembona will probably go to the NBA. So they're going to be losing like a lot of the top players. And it's unclear if they'll be able to kind of fill in those. I mean, those are big losses. And so this is like a really big year for UCLA because next year is probably not going to be nearly as good on paper.
Yeah, and I think kind of the thing with this year's team for them, it kind of comes down to how good those freshmen are, really just because you can recruit a five-star, but not all five-stars are created equal, right? So I don't think you'd assume Amari Bailey to come in and have the same level of production as, you know, Isaiah Collier next year, right? Isaiah Collier's got a more translatable game to college, and Bailey's more, you know, he's more athletic than Collier. I think he can jump higher, but there's a big question of like translatability, right? So
yeah,
I think Bailey will do certainly better than Peyton Watson did. I mean, Peyton Watson was a train wreck offensively for UCLA last year. But one thing I did find interesting is just reading some of these initial mock drafts from ESPN. Like John Gavone does a really good job for them. And he had Bona going in the early 20s, I think like 21, 22, something like that. And he had Amari Bailey as the last pick of the first round. So clearly there's a disconnect between where he was rated out of high school and where they're projecting him to go in the draft. So if he ends up being more of a fringe first round level talent, I'm not sure if that's really, you know, good enough for UCLA to be the team that a lot of their fans want. So I think kind of the story there is with regard to this year's team, can those freshmen exceed kind of that initial John Gavone projection for how good those kids are going to be? Long-term wise, I think it's, you know, there's several layers to it, right? So there's the NIL layer, which is, I think, preventing Cronin from pursuing a lot of the top US kids. Now, if they like get Ron Holland, they can flip this narrative a little bit. But UCLA, they've been going more the international route, I think partly because their NIL is not up to speed to compete with some of these other top programs. And now they're running into issues admitting one of their top international kids. So I think there's a lot of frustration between Cronin and admissions and the UCLA administration, because he feels his hands are tied with NIL and his hands are tied with admissions. So I don't really have the answer of how it's going to shake out, but it's certainly an interesting story to keep tabs on.
Yeah, well, that's absolutely the case. I don't know how they, with the NIL situation they seem to have, I don't know how they could possibly get Ron Holland, but maybe they'll pull a rabbit out of the hat, or, you know, somebody will write a big check. That one is kind of, you know, doesn't make a ton of sense to me. the other thing I just talked about at Amari Bailey is, you know, Mick Cronin's offense. And we've talked about this many times in the podcast. He runs, he runs an offense that really caters to getting strong matchups for his shot makers in the right positions, but then they got to hit the shots. And when UCLA struggled last year, it was when guys like Jules Bernard, he wasn't hitting his shots, or Jaime Jaquez was hurt, so he couldn't hit his shots, or Johnny Juzang shot them out of the game. You know, Amari Bailey is going to be counted on to hit some really key shots that are not going to just be dunks or layups. You know, he's going to have the jump shots, you know, in Mick Cronin's offense. So, and maybe he will, and maybe he'll be great at it. He'll develop over the season, and but you know, we'll have to see how that works. I don't think he's going to come in and be as strong of a jump shooter as Johnny Juzang was the last year or so. That being said, Juzang also took some ill-advised shots and that hurt UCLA at times. The other piece here is like Tiger Campbell was so strong shooting for the first part of last season, didn't really stick, but we'll see how he shoots this season. There's a lot of questions. I'm sure UCLA fans are feeling a little bit anxious. I think they were thrilled to hear that Ron Holland was still considering them. But to me, just if they're really having these, it doesn't make a ton of sense to me that we know about their NIL situation, that they'd really be a strong player for Ron Holland. But, you know, I've been wrong before, and I could, you know, and we're both kind of clowns here. So we just don't know.
Yeah. And some of it might work itself out with UCLA moving to the Big Ten, assuming they do join the Big Ten. Just because they're going to have so much more TV money than like Arizona, for instance. So,
yeah.
You know, that in theory would kind of clear the path towards UCLA having a really good NIL program. I guess the one thing that could get in the way of that is just university politics. If they just decide that they're above the whole NIL thing, right? And they don't want to go that low, right? And they do the kind of the holier than thou thing and trend towards the Stanford approach. You know, personally, like I feared USC would be that way, but I think we have a lot of evidence starting to shake out that USC NIL is in a better place than UCLA NIL.
Yeah, well, that's definitely the case. Okay, let's talk about some other teams. You know, Arizona had their annual inter-squad scrimmage that's open to that they do at McHale and is open to the whole public, which is the blue-red or the red-blue game. I think we may have talked a little bit about this, but Arizona is a very big team. A lot of European players, which is not surprising considering Tommy Lloyd's background. You know, the losses they have of Mathurin and Dalen Terry, especially on, you know, on offense, the wing position, those are going to hurt. Coloco was just tremendous last year, especially on defense. Arizona is not going to have a defender quite as good as Coloco at guarding the rim, but their bigs overall are going to be very strong. And they're on off, I think offensively, their bigs are actually going to be better than last season because they have Ballo back. Ballo was strong. And then they bring this Henry Versar. Is that what, do we agree with that?
Yeah, Beeser.
And you know, he's not the only one. They have some other larger European guys that look pretty good in that scrimmage. The question, you know, kind of like around the perimeter, it's a little, it just doesn't look quite as nice. You know, they're still relying on Kirk Carissa at point guard. Now they may or may not get Kylan Boswell back from injury. He's never played from Arizona before, but he's a very, very highly rated recruit for the 2023 class, who reclassified to 2022 and promptly hurt his foot, which is definitely not the injury you want to have when you're when you're leaving high school early and trying to get, you know, getting good at a program like Arizona. So I'm a little skeptical of how long it will take to integrate him, especially coming off the injury. Otherwise, you know, the transfers in, Courtney Ramey from Texas, you know, I've seen tape of him that looks decent at times. He was not good in the center squad scrimmage. And then they also got a transfer from a smaller, from a mid-major. Do you know the other one they got?
Campbell?
Campbell College, right.
Cedric Henderson, yeah. You're talking about?
Cedric Henderson, who I think they're going to rely on to give them some solid minutes at the three. They also have Pelly Larson at the three, but I wasn't super impressed by him. So, like, I'm a lot – the other player I was kind of referring to is this Philip Borovichinin.
Borovichinin?
Okay, whatever it is.
Philip.
Yeah. He looked pretty decent, you know, in addition to Henry Visser. So, you know, there's a lot of, and then they have Dylan Anderson coming in too from Gilbert, which is right down the street from where I live. So they have a lot of bigs. They have a lot of talent, you know, at the rim. The guards, I'm not as sure about. And, you know, I think there's going to have to be some teams that really just pressure those guards much more tightly than any team did to Arizona last year, other than Houston.
Right. I think they're going to take a step back, but that doesn't mean they're not good. I mean, taking a step back from being the number five KenPom team in the country, you could still be really good. So I think I'm pretty high on them. I am a little bit worried about them defensively. So they ended the year number 21 in KenPom D, and they're losing Dalen Terry, who's one of the best wing defenders in the country, and Christian Coloco, who is one of the best shot blockers in the country. So I don't really see how you replace those guys and still maintain, you know, elite defensive status. Just breaking down their metrics, they were second in the country in two-point defense, and they were 15th in free throw defense, which is a total luck thing, and 25th in block shots and defensive block rate. So I think they'll regress on all of those. Ballo will still be able to give them some rim protection. He's a good shot blocker, but not quite the athlete, doesn't have the mobility of Coloco. So I see them regressing there a little bit. But offensively, I think they have a really good chance to, you know, be a top 10 or 15 offense in the country. I really like Henry Visser. I think he's going to be, I think he's good. I think he's underrated. I think 24/7 had him in the low 30s, but he seems like a top 20 incoming guy to me. Really skilled, good offensively. Wouldn't be shocked if he was like a one and done. I think he might even exceed Tubelis's level there. And then I guess, you know, so much of it just comes down to Kreese, right? Can Kreese make shots? I don't know. I mean, maybe, you know, I'm surprised Lloyd is trusting him and giving him the keys to this thing. I'll say that. I think that's a really bold move.
Well, I mean, like, I don't think that was necessarily his intention. They did bring in Raymond from Texas, and they got Boswell to reclassify. But so, you know, the other thing to really now, I have to say this up front, I think Arizona is my pick to win the conference over UCLA. However, when it comes to Kreese, there is a new rule this season in college basketball for flopping, where they're going to start assessing technical fouls from floppers. And I don't think there's any player that might be more impacted by that new rule than Kreese. So I am very curious to see how that works itself out. I'm just going to really briefly go down the road where I am. Arizona State had an open scrimmage yesterday. So we got some reporting on it. There's some video online. It's not super video, but it exists. You know, Marcus Bagley is back and playing, at least for now, for Arizona State. He's kind of a curiosity at this point.
The ghost of Marcus Bagley. Yeah.
Yeah. So they, you know, if everybody had returned that could return for Arizona State, I think they would have actually had a really strong team on paper, like at least be like a bubble team. But, you know, they got some transfers that were unexpected. They still have DJ Horn. They cut Frankie Collins, transferred him from Michigan. He was a kind of high profile recruit who had a disappointing freshman season in Michigan. I think they're kind of like happy for him to move on. They got two brothers named Cambridge, one from Nevada, who's kind of a volume scorer. And then the other who had been played at both, I think, Auburn and Tennessee. You know, they have Boyacki. They still have Luther Muhammad. You know, they have a lot of bodies here that don't seem terrible, but you know, it's hard for me to tell who's you know going to step up and be the leader here. You know, Marcus Bagley for a long time was talked about as an NBA player, and you know he can put up some good numbers. But even when I saw him when he was healthy last season, in the game I watched, he played, did okay, but kind of hung around the perimeter a lot, shot jumpers, and they got upset by UC Riverside in that game. So, you know, if they still had Jalen Graham, I'd look at that team and say, okay, well, this is interesting. They have Graham on the inside, then they have Bagley as a compliment. But they don't have that. You know, Hurley's actually for the last, I mean, he usually wins at least 10 games in conference. I think this team again will. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts? I mean, have you used any brain power to think about this team? Are they even worth thinking about?
You know, I haven't spent a ton of time thinking about them. I'll give you a little quick trivia question here. So Luther Muhammad last year shot 83 threes. How many do you think he made?
13.
Wow. You actually undershot. He made 16. So he went 16 for 83. So that's 19%.
I knew it was a terrible. I knew it was there were so many things about teams offense last year that was just terrible. Now, the funny thing is they actually played pretty good defense.
They did.
You know, they beat UCLA in Tempe just by playing defense and kind of finally getting the ball to Jalen Graham. And that was a whole weird situation too. So this is by no means a stellar team, and they'll probably, it's probably a team that's going to like drop six games out of, have six losses out of conference play, and then come into conference and beat some teams and screw up teams trying to get bids.
Right. Do they still have Alonzo Gaffney on this team?
I think they do have Gaffney.
He's like a sneaky good defensive player.
He is.
Yeah. So I could see them. They might take a little bit of a step back defensively just because Jackson was a really good steal guy and Graham could block shots and Lawrence, like, could rebound and block a few shots and he's gone. But, you know, with Gaffney and Boyacki, you know, defending the rim, I think they'll be decent on the interior with their length. I just think, like, I don't think any of these guys they're adding are like prolific shot makers, right? So I could see them still kind of being that not so good offense. I don't think they'll be 207 in offense. I think they'll probably be like 100 to 150, but
I think Bagley might improve their efficiency a lot, but I think their offense could be really bad. Do you think like Frankie Collins is going to come in there and all of a sudden just set the world on fire?
He won't. I think the upside for them offensively is just like Marion Jackson not shooting 173 threes and shooting 27% on those threes, right? It's like they're getting rid of, like, that's just a horrific number, right?
And right, but they're going to have Desmond Cambridge shooting all those threes, and maybe he'll shoot slightly better percentage, but I'm not sure if it'll be that much better.
It's just, I don't know, like Luther Muhammad probably won't shoot 19%, maybe he shoots 28%. I think it was so bad last year, right? That you're going to have some like positive mean regression on some of these guys. Like even Luther Muhammad, right? He shot like 80% from the line. So he's not that bad of a shooter as he showed. Now, like Bobby Hurley doesn't like get on his guys at all for shot selection. So maybe they do shoot that bad as a team again, but they're just a tough team to peg, right? Like they have some athleticism, they've got like some shot making and they've got some length. So yeah, maybe their destiny is they're just the same kind of team they've that they were last year, right? Poor offensive team, pretty good defensive team. And because they have the athletes, like, they pull off a couple upsets down in Tempe.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I guess in conference play last year, DJ Horn was the leading scorer, just barely beat out Nealon Graham, even though Horn only shot 36% in conference. So Jay Heath was kind of the most efficient outside scorer, and he's gone. Right. Yeah, Kamani Lawrence is fine. Kamani Lawrence, after how many years of college basketball, is finally done. Yeah. So, you know, I think they probably lost. Even though Horn was their leading scorer, I actually think he was the weakest starter they had. So I actually think they probably lost four of the top five players from last year. And I just don't know if they have, you know, the replacements are strong enough. But we shall see.
Yep.
Okay. I guess the last team just to talk about really briefly that I'd like to talk about is Oregon. You know, we always end up talking about them. I think, you know, they have two for 2023. We should mention they have two 5-stars already committed, top 10 players. So you can definitely say the shine is not completely off for the Ducks. But that being said, this what's gone on with Oregon now over now multiple seasons. They are not as strong team they were, you know, it just a few years ago. And if you go through, you know, their record in conference, they actually technically won the conference last year, our Evan Mobley year, just because they played two games less than everybody else. SC had the most wins, but right. Our winning percentage wasn't quite as good. And of course, we played each other in the, you know, in the NCAA tournament. SC won easily. You know, now looking back, last five seasons, Oregon's been 10-8, 10-8, 13-5, 14-9, 11-9. They're not really a dominant team in the conference any longer. And maybe they get back to the season where they do finish in the top two in the conference. I don't think they can win the conference. I don't actually think they can finish higher than Arizona or UCLA at this point. But they do kind of look like, you know, potentially a decent pick for third place. Will Richardson's back. Gary A is back. They sell Nepali Dante. They add Khalil Ware. So, you know, there's some talent there. I don't think it's good. It's strong enough to win the conference.
They just weren't good enough defensively last year. I mean, they ended up with the number 52 offense, which isn't that bad. I mean, that's, you know, if they would have had the number 52 defense, they would have made a tournament, right? And probably ended up the top, I don't know, 35-ish KenPom team. I think that's fair to say. But Dante, like, he was a really good offensive player. Had good touch, was efficient from two. You know, he was a decent shot blocker, not like a freaky shot blocker, but defended the rim a bit. So I actually thought he had a pretty good year. It was a solid role player for them. But where it went wrong was Eric Williams was so bad. And Rivaldo Soares was also terrible. And Davion Harmon just, I wouldn't say he was terrible, but he wasn't great. So they just didn't really hit on those transfers. And I think they even thought Guerrier would give them a little bit more than he ended up giving them. So Will Richardson's kind of, and then Jacob Young was just an atrocious shooter. So they kind of lack the outside shooting from the guards outside of Will Richardson, and didn't really defend at a high enough level. This year they do add, yeah, like you were saying, Khalil Ware should help a lot with their interior defense. They do need to rebound better. So they were number 297 in defensive rebounding.
And one of the reasons for that, by the way, is because Dana Altman has insisted that they play small. So last year they would not play Kepnong, who's now off to Washington. They would not play him with Dante. They insist on playing Guerrier at four. I'm curious, are they going to do the same thing this year? Are they going to have Khalil Ware there and they will not play him with Dante? And, you know, they're in the same situation where Guerrier is playing the four. Now, I will say that Khalil Ware he's a lot more flexible as a player. He can do a lot more things. They kept Nongkhan. So I could see, you can actually probably get away with playing Ware at the four in a way you can, you know, it's tougher to get away with playing a guy like Kepnong at the four.
Right. Right. So no, and then they still have Nate Biddle around. Like, I don't think he's going to get a ton of playing time. But you know, who knows with that. So no, I think they're talented. They, you know, add some interesting pieces to this team, and they getting rid of Eric Williams will be a plus for them. Davion Harmon, like, I don't think they were, you know, sorry to see him leave, even though he wasn't like a horrible player. So yeah, they'll be good. I mean, I think they'll be in the mix for, you know, top 3 to 4 in the conference, right? I don't think they'll challenge, you know, Arizona or UCLA at the top, but kind of that next tier, they're probably as good of a pick as any. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that probably the case. Just, you know, for the record, we should also just mention that they have Keyshawn Bartholomew coming in from Colorado, and then
yep.
Jermaine Cuisinart coming in from South Carolina. I know you're not a huge fan of his, but it's interesting. They're, you know, the kind of the trade off that they now have, where they're losing Eric Williams, losing Davion Harmon, losing Jacob Young, adding Cuisinart and Bartholomew. You know, and then I guess the other guy that they're adding is this another JUCO. They're bringing Tyrone Williams, who, you know, he's a JUCO that looks good in video, but it's so hard to evaluate those junior college players. And Holman's had some success there, so we shouldn't diminish it. But, you know, I don't know. You know, we'll just have to see, I guess. I mean,
And what does it say about Todd Boyle that Dana just goes and picks off one of the starters?
Yeah, wow, that's
right.
Well, Colorado, I guess we've been talking about them just really briefly, but that looks like a tough situation they're in there, because, you know, they're kind of waiting down to the deadline whether or not Jabari Walker was going to leave for the NBA, and he did. They're big, whose name escapes me right now, who was there for all you know, 4 years, is gone. Decided not to play that this season.
Batty,
yeah. Decided not to play that this season. So, and then, you know, then also Bartholomew, who had a really nice season, he leaves too. So yeah, they still have KJ Simpson, and they still have
De Silva.
De Silva was like one of the best, most efficient shooters in the conference last year. You know, and then they have some of the, you know, I don't know. I don't think Colorado looks very dangerous on paper, and they don't really have like a, you know, unless De Silva turns into it, they don't really have like a scary, you know, like they really have like an all conference, first team all conference type player, but they normally have that guy. I don't think they've got one this season.
Yeah. I think the Colorado fans hope it'll be KJ Simpson, but I think he's probably like a year or two away from being that.
Yeah, I don't think he's – I mean, I like KJ, but I do not think he's this season ready to be first-team all-conference at all. You know, maybe next season, but, you know, not this season. I think De Silva's the better bet. De Silva averages, you know, double-figure scoring last season in conference. His thing is he doesn't rebound. He only like averaging 3 rebounds a game. So, yeah, that was like a really underrated stat for Walker. I mean, he was a crazy good rebounder too. You know, so them losing both those guys, I get, you know, Nick Clifford had that kind of crazy block. Was it on Drew Peterson?
He's a good athlete, Nick Clifford. Yeah. He can jump. He's might be the most explosive guy on that team.
Yeah. And then your favorite player, Julian Hammond's coming back too. So, anyway,
I mean, my real favorite player is Lawson Lovering, Chase. I don't know if you looked at Lawson Lovering's like numbers for the season. It's interesting. Well,
that 18.8% field goal percentage. But the thing is, Julie Hammond was 29.6 in conference play. So neither one of those guys was setting the world on fire. Okay, so should we talk a little football?
Let's do it.
Okay, so rather than getting into too many a review of too many of the games the past week, because I was at a wedding, so I didn't get to see a ton. I did get to see USC. I guess we can just talk about that. Because it was a kind of a took care of business game. Defense definitely rose to the occasion. Offense, the passing game sputtered kind of again. My main takeaway going into that game, I think I mentioned that the Washington State quarterback, whose name is Ward, right?
Yeah.
He's very talented, but he cannot actually execute their offense. And you kind of started to see that in the game, like, especially the second half, like the only positive plays they had were like when he scrambled. I'm not as enthralled with the idea that we shut down their offense because I didn't really give them much credit as an offense anyway. But, you know, the defense did rise to the occasion. Now that's how many consecutive games where the defense has played really well in the second half.
Yeah, I think it's also worth noting that they did well defensively without getting the turnovers, which I think is important, right? Like getting stops. If you can get stops, you're a good defense. So I think they really showcased that. He really needed to take more chances. I mean, I don't think he pushed the ball downfield enough. Like he did that one time, series after Kalen Bullock got ejected and they hit that deep pass with Beavers, the backup safety, was in the game. But I think he was so afraid of like throwing picks and he kind of got in his own head with the, USC gets a ton of picks and just didn't really take enough chances.
Yeah, I think that's the case. What are your thoughts on our passing game or lack thereof?
I'm nervous about it. I mean, Caleb, he doesn't really look right. He looks kind of inaccurate. And it's great that we're winning without that really clicking. But, eventually I think it's going to catch up to us, right? Like, I don't know if it's going to be the Utah game, the UCLA game, college football playoff. But he's just not quite like the CJ Stroud, Bryce Young level that he needs to be for this team to be really, really good.
Yep, I agree with that too. Okay, let's bounce around talking about a couple of games and then we'll maybe circle back. Penn State at Michigan, line is Michigan -7 at home. Both teams undefeated, Penn State 5-0. Penn State obviously had that, kind of a really decisive win against Auburn. Otherwise, schedule has been very soft. Penn State has not looked super great in their other two Big Ten games. They won them both, but total margin in those wins was 14 points. I'm almost surprised Michigan's not a bigger favorite at home here. Maybe this is another of those, trap lines. I feel like I want to take Michigan, lay the points here, but maybe, I don't know. Maybe the Vegas knows something I don't.
Yeah, I'll take Penn State. I think, their analytics and net yards per play are really good this year. I think the Auburn win was a little bit more impressive than some people give them credit for because Auburn competed with Georgia for most of that game. They've got some good athletes in their front seven. And I am a little worried about JJ McCarthy in a big game. I don't think he's been really tested. And Indiana hung around in that game for most of that game. And I don't think that Indiana team's very good. So I don't know if Penn State beats them, but I would take the points.
Okay. I'll be decisive then. I'll lay the points. I'll take Michigan laying the points. Kansas at Oklahoma. Oklahoma is so bad. It seems like worth bringing up just because Kansas has had a kind of nice season here. Oklahoma 9-point favorite at home. I don't know. They're going to pull this off. I have a feeling Kansas actually, I think I take the point. This seems like a trap also, but I'm going to take the points.
Yeah, I'll take Kansas. I don't think the Kansas starting quarterback is going to play. And I think Oklahoma is going to get their starter back, but I think Kansas is just better than Oklahoma. So I'll take them. If they win, I won't be surprised.
Yeah, the backup for Kansas didn't look super hot, but yeah, I guess that makes sense. Not as many marquee games this week. Oklahoma State we do have a lot of unbeatens playing each other, though, I should say. We already talked about Penn State and Michigan. Oklahoma State and TCU. Oklahoma State 5-0 at TCU 5-0. 3.5-point favorite TCU at home. I'm going to take the points at Oklahoma State.
Yeah, I'll take the points as well. I think TCU is a little bit inflated right now by their blowout win against Oklahoma, and that Oklahoma team is just awful. So I'll take the Cowboys and the points.
Okay. Let's see. Syracuse at home. They're 5-0 against North Carolina State, 5-1. Syracuse 3.5-point favorite at home. Gosh, I don't really have a great feel for this one. I probably would not bet it if I had the choice, but I guess I'll take North Carolina State here, although I don't feel great about it.
Yeah, I'll take North Carolina State as well. I think they have better athletes and getting 3.5, so I'll take that side.
Okay. Let's see. What other games are really worth interesting enough to talk about? Yeah, Clemson, Florida State, 3.5-point favorite, Clemson. I'll take Clemson and lay the 3.5 points.
I will take Florida State. I think they rise to the occasion and get it done here.
Okay. We have Mississippi State at Kentucky. Kentucky getting 6.5 points. Huh, that's interesting. I guess Mississippi State with Leach is earning some respect here. I will take Mississippi State, I guess.
To me, it depends on if Will Levis plays Kentucky's quarterback, because they didn't have him last week and they dropped a home game to South Carolina. I think he's really important. So I guess I'll say I'll take Kentucky if he plays, and I'll take Mississippi State if he doesn't.
Fair enough. Okay. Big game of the day, at least on paper. Alabama number 3. Tennessee number 6. Tennessee getting 7.5 points. The game is in Knoxville. Do we know if Bryce Young is playing in this game?
We don't. I think the expectation is that he will, but he might not be 100%.
Okay. I'm just going to go ahead and take Alabama and lay the points.
I'll take Tennessee. I think the line is about right if he's 100%, but if he's not, I think the crowd will be really into it. And I've actually been really impressed by the Tennessee team. I think they look real to me. So we'll see. Famous last words with Tennessee. But.
All right. Okay. Yeah. Then for us, the big game at Utah, 5 o'clock start on the Pacific Coast, 8 o'clock on the East Coast on Fox. Utah coming off a bad loss to UCLA, 3.5-point favorite at home. Everything here kind of screams Utah should win this for a variety of reasons. I don't know. I'm going to take USC here. I guess you said USC gets the points too. They could lose and still cover. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
I don't know what to do with this game. Like I was sure I would be taking Utah, but 3.5 kind of suggests that Vegas thinks that Utah is better than SC. And I don't really know how you could think that after watching them play Florida and watching them play UCLA. Maybe their home field is worth like 6 points and it won't matter, but I'm kind of with you. Like it seems like maybe a slight lean to Utah on the game, but a slight lean to SC on the spread here.
Yeah. I have a feeling, I just have this feeling that SC is going to come out and play a little bit better than they did this past week. And we're going to see the offense play a little bit better. So, but we'll see.
So what do you think of the theory that like Lincoln Riley is holding offense, plays back for this game? Are you buying any of that, or is that just
no? I mean, this is the old like sandbagging. Look, I can see him. I can see him kind of, implementing more of the playbook as we go in. But I don't think we're going to see something substantially different than we've seen all season long. I think. You're going to see a lot of quite frankly, it's to me, it's not the playbook. I mean, I think we have open receivers. We just got to hit the guys. when they're open.
Yeah.
Or spot them when they're open. I mean, I don't, you know, that key late in the Washington State game, that key third down conversion where we ran that, you know, that kind of misdirection action and then throw that little swing pass to Die out there. I mean, that's a tremendous play. And, you know, I mean, that's, we've been running that all season though. And it's just, it's a great play. And it was great timed. You know, the one thing we didn't see too much in recent weeks is we haven't run a lot of like zone read action where there was, where Caleb actually kept the ball. You know, especially in like short yardage situations. So I'm wondering if we'll see more of that. You know, Utah did not, their defense looked very weak against UCLA. So that's, you know, that's, there's a lot of bad film there, you know? So I'm curious to see what we can do with it. Now, you know, Chip Kelly, you know, when Chip Kelly gets going, he, you know, he can get wide receivers in space. And he was able to do that. He was really able to get a lot of his offensive players in space. So a lot of misdirection. He does more misdirection stuff than we normally do, but you know, I think there's stuff for the taking there. But you know, obviously playing in Salt Lake is a whole different ball game. So yeah, I think Lincoln Riley's been sandbagging. No, but we may see a couple plays here and there that that he has run quite the season.
It's a really, you know, I think you make a great point too about UCLA exposing them and kind of the bad film there, because I mean, USC and UCLA offensively, they're pretty similar. Like they're not the same, but like they both incorporate, like, you know, the power run. Like UCLA has Charbonnet, Riley's had pretty good running backs over the years, but they have a pretty explosive passing game and kind of the pro style with spread concepts. So I think there's going to be a lot of tape there for Lincoln to use. And I think beyond that, like Utah has this reputation of like, oh, they have the big Polynesian dudes and they're really good in their front seven. But I mean, this defense, like Richardson at Florida kind of ate them alive. I mean, DTR and Charbonnet totally ate them alive last week. And then Stroud dropped like almost 50 in the Rose Bowl on those guys. So I don't think, like, the program does seem to be declining a little bit defensively. I'm talking about Utah here, and they've risen offensively. So we'll see. I mean, what do you think between this game and UCLA? Like, what do you fear more between those two?
I would say actually, I you know, UCLA has looked better for sure the last couple of weeks. But the fact that the game is in Los Angeles, it takes away a big kind of unknown factor. You know, I think just the atmosphere is going to be a big factor on this one. It is interesting though, right? Because after this, you know, the two toughest games of the season left on the schedule are presumably going to be UCLA and Notre Dame, both games in Los Angeles. So, you know, I know there's still road games to be played, but I think just Arizona, right? Arizona.
That's it. Just Arizona.
Yep. Yeah. So.
And don't forget, you know, the Colorado's in Los Angeles too, just in case you were.
I was already worried I wasn't going to be able to sleep tonight. you know, I'm flying next weekend, not this upcoming one. Next weekend, I'm flying to, next weekend, yes, he's off. I'm flying to Hawaii, but the following weekend, I'm flying back from Hawaii. And so I don't know whether or not I'll even be able to watch this Arizona game, on the end of the month. But after that, you know, Cal and Colorado, gosh, you know, I'll be looking forward for us to get to the Big 12 or Big 10, I'll put it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. I think overall, like, if you're an SC fan, you got to be feeling pretty good about the 6-0. And, you know, I think people pose the question, like, of UCLA, Notre Dame, and Utah, how many of those do you win? I think I would go with 2-1 right now, just based on the percentages. And if you can do that, that gets you to 11-1. I think it's hard to, if you get there, like, be anything but really excited about how the season went. So.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. No. I think I'm already excited about how the season's gone. Even if we lose to even if we lose to Utah and then we lose to UCLA, or, you know, even if we lose all three, to, if we go 9-3, yeah, I'm not going to be, you know, oh my God, this is horrible. We were 4-8 last season. So, and just having a year, you know, we do need more players coming in, and, you know, and I think Caleb Williams needs a little more snap. I hate to say this, but I think he would, you know, benefit from some more snaps. And, I think you just got to get the program heading in the right direction. And from what I'm seeing, the program is heading in the right direction. That's no matter what kind of we see this weekend, or, you know, if we kind of drop games toward the end of the season where, UCLA, at least, you know, Chip Kelly's been there several years. So he's got his program, you know, as best as he can have it. So, you know, you need to give Lincoln Riley some time to get his program in order.
Yeah, absolutely. So if they do get through this game, I think the likelihood is they'll be undefeated at the time USC opens up in basketball. And I don't know the last time that happened in this program.
Well, right. I mean, I have a general idea, right? I think it was 2004 or 2005, excuse me, 2005.
Yeah. Oh, five. It's got to be 2005, right? Don't think 2007, 2008, 2009.
No, right. We lost early games in all three. We kept losing the first road conference game.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right. All righty.
Okay. Well, late podcast tonight, but I appreciate you hanging on, Nick. And any last thoughts before we get out of here? Anything to look for?
So just, keep your eye on the Isaiah Collier thing coming up next month. And, that's all I got. You know, we'll do kind of more in-depth previews of both the Pac-12 and kind of the national scene as we get closer to the season here. But are we within a month of college basketball?
Oh, we are. I think we're 26 days, something like that.
There it is. So, yeah, it's creeping up on us for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, man. Until next time, fight on.
Fight on.